Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Our guest today, Marnie Nixon, who is known in Hollywood for dubbing some of the greatest voices in some of the greatest musicals. We caught up with Miss Nixon on her national tour with a production of My Fair Lady, where she will be playing the role of Henry Higgins' mother, which was played by Gladys Cooper in the film. We had spoken to her some time back about a wonderful book that she wrote, entitled I Could Have Sung All Night, an inside story about her youth and her career in Hollywood as a ghost singer. She, of course, is a very talented singer in her own right, and she will be appearing at the Academy of Music in the Cameron Mackintosh and the National Theatre of Great Britain's new production of Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. The show is making its Philadelphia premiere and will run from March 11th through the 16th. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, Miss Nixon, Marnie Nixon, I'm Jill Pasternak. I spoke to you before about your wonderful book. Do you remember?
Yes, I do indeed.
And I was very excited to follow up in this whole saga of what you're doing because it was exciting to hear that you're coming to Philly and you're going to be in My Fair Lady.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm excited.
I wanted to follow up with you and your whole career with, you know, coming from Hollywood. Of course, you had done Broadway many, many years ago, didn't you?
Yes.
And,
it wasn't that recent that we closed in Nine and James Joyce's The Dead and Follies.
Yes.
Was on Broadway just, 6 years ago.
But I mean, in terms of something like My Fair Lady, which of course you had dubbed the voice for Audrey Hepburn for the film, and how does it feel going into the live production? Could you tell a little bit about, you know, the whole transference of going from film and, you know, your whole experience working so many years as the voice, and then there you are on the stage in a role in the same production?
Well, actually, the whole thing that seems to me is that it's really like the old cliche that plays the thing.
Right.
The actual nobility of the whole show and the way it's been transferred to becoming a musical and the way it stands up every night and the glory of the language and the story
and the music, of course,
and the music. And in this production, there's also, besides all that, there's special attention to the sets. Are we all make a joke about whistling the sets, but these sets they're so flexible and opulent and intense. They come down, they come in, they fly out, and in a second they're changing with this wonderful, you know, technical resources that they have nowadays. It's just incredible, and the costumes are wonderful, and then the company is, in spite of all sorts of things that are happening and changes all the time and people leaving and getting sick, and it's been well put together. It came from London, this production.
Yes, I was just going to ask you, this was in the West End, is the whole production or just some of the stars?
No. Well, the production, meaning the physical thing, the leading man, Chris, is, I think he's done it all, he's done it in London for many, many years. And I'm not sure whether Lisa played it in London too.
Has it been running for a while in London?
Yes.
Now, this, the company that, are you going cross-country with this? Is that, is it a national tour?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And, again, once the film had been made, and I just want your opinion. I mean, the film was so spectacular. It was the essence of the I just was ultra, you know, the beaten costumes and, of course, the great performances. And, of course, you were there. And I just wondered how does it feel to go back to its original form, you know, as a Broadway production or a stage production? I mean, is there a big change? I think that the dialogue is all the same pretty much, isn't it? Isn't it very much just the way that it's shot, you know?
Oh, yes. You can't not change a book once it's been written. But this has been expanded a little bit to incorporate some new physical things, but also in the part of Doolittle.
Yes.
They've expanded his role a little bit. And it really works well.
It expanded from the Broadway, the theater production, or is
yes,
it
from the original.
From the original production, yeah.
And also, but it's the same. They did that for the London production. They expanded that, and this is the same as it was in London. But it's not quite the same as the original because of the extension, but it works very well.
It's dialogue. I mean, there's no new material in there vocally, is there?
And some of the songs are just extended a little bit.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. I see. And now you play the mother of Henry Higgins. Is there any singing in that?
No, I have no songs.
But you know, it's so interesting. She had a very prominent role. I mean, in the sense of her importance, and however the role was done in the film, of course, it was very, you know, it stood out, actually. She was an important person there.
Well, I think it's a very important role. You sort of see things in a different perspective from her point of view, and you see why, you know, where Higgins has come from. And she sort of has an overview of what's happening, and she is almost the catalyst to making sure that it comes out all right. And it's really
well. She likes Eliza, I think, very much. She respects her strength and so on, and
somebody to keep Higgins in line
yeah.
too.
Yes. Uh huh. So now, how long have you been on tour? How long has this production been on tour, or is this?
I joined. The company began, I think, in September, and I joined in Chicago, mm-hmm. which I think was just January.
Yes, and how much longer will the tour be lasting?
And the tour will go until June, and we will have, at that point, we would have gone to various cities in the Midwest and also to Toronto and to the West Coast and Seattle, and then we go to Toronto, and then we come back to the West Coast for the last bit.
The last bit. So I guess, are there people around there that you're in touch with after so many years?
Oh, well, still, my family is all in Los Angeles.
Yes,
You know, my grandchildren, they all live there, and it was my home for
so many years, yeah.
Yes. So it's like coming home. Also, Seattle, too.
Mm-hmm. Have you been doing a lot of theater in the last few years?
Before this, I think the last... Well, we did a production of My Fair Lady at it was presented by the New York Philharmonic.
Oh, and a concert version?
Just last month, a concert version, but it really was not. It was fully costumed, and mm-hmm. it was just that the orchestra, the wonderful orchestra, was on stage in the back. Mm-hmm. And so you saw them sort of like subliminally, mm-hmm. but it was the same production, the same script, and wonderfully done with Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, okay.
and but it was just four performances, and it's been taped for a release, mm-hmm. which is wonderful.
That will be on TV, I guess. As well. Yeah, that's terrific. Well, I know you've done an enormous amount of coaching and so on, and then you wrote this fascinating book. How does it feel to be back on stage? I mean,
I always love stage. I feel like I come alive on stage. I love it, and I like, you know, doing it live and playing each night and being with the moment and mm-hmm. responding to the audience. And I just adore anything on stage.
Well, I read in your book that you had met Frederick Lowe, I think, in the beginning. Was it The Girl in Pink Tights?
Pink Tights, right.
Was that Gigi? Oh, gosh, I remember. Gigi Jean-Mail? Was she?
Yes.
Yeah. And you said he came on, I don't remember what it was exactly, but he played this thing that he was working on with Alan Lerner, and you thought, oh my goodness, if the rest of the show is as corny as his song, and what was it? I Could Have Danced All Night.
Well, it was I Could Have Danced All Night, but with different words. It was amazing. It was in three-quarter time,
a waltz. Oh my!
And it made and with his accent and everything. The words were, I want to dance all night.
Uh-huh.
And because he was, I want to dance all night. I want to dance all night. And somehow, when he was playing loudly, pounding on the piano, I thought, oh my gosh, it's a nice melody, but it's like a Viennese waltz left over, and it's never going to go on Broadway. And then suddenly I heard in four times, I could have danced all night.
Yes.
Da 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 da. Anyway, it was like a different song. It's just amazing how little changes.
Of course, yes.
Take place.
But it's so. I just was so interested in knowing what, if you can express it a little bit without revealing too much emotion. Just the fact that here you were. You had dubbed the voice of Audrey Hepburn for this phenomenal film. I mean, the film, I think, is just fantastic. And here you are doing another role on stage in the theater as it was originally written. What a journey that is.
Yes, I just feel when I'm backstage listening and I'm not on stage and I'm listening to the whole thing, I'm just amazed at a project like this when it's really well put together, well written, and well conceived, and well performed, how different people can bring to their whole, mm-hmm. bring to it their whole selves, and yet the whole play then comes off as so important, and everybody's reacting to the same laugh lines, and and everybody's found that line for their own role, all themselves, and it all comes together.
And it must be very fulfilling for you, I think, to kind of come through this life of yours, which is so productive and is still so productive, and the music is still there, you know.
Yes, it's very fulfilling. It's like a circle.
Yes, it's wonderful.
Yeah, completed circle.
And I that's why I so wanted to speak with you, because you are a perfect person to talk about this, because you've been there, done that in so many different venues, you know, and that was why I was thrilled, and I hope to see you here in the production.
It was very good. I remembered our last interview and how, you know, insightful and wonderful it was. I was glad to hear from you.
Well, thank you. And we got a wonderful response to that. And so once again, good luck. And I hope to see you. And it's wonderful to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our next guest today is Mervan Mehta, Vice President of Education and Programming at the Kimmel Center. Welcome, Mirvan. It's wonderful to have you here and to speak with you about so many exciting things.
Good to be back, Jill. Thank you.
And, of course, anyone who goes to the Kimmel Center will recognize you because you do come on stage and you do speak very, very often before the performances. But what I'm so excited about is the new season that is happening here in Philadelphia, the complete new season, of course, the Kimmel Center, but then Broadway at the Academy, which is a very exciting happening here. One thinks of Broadway in New York, right? But what's going on here in Philadelphia with this whole series that has developed over the years is extremely exciting. It is first rate. You have the most prominent performers. And things are happening here that I think our audience would like to know about. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going on?
Sure. I mean, what's happened over the last 7, 8, 9 years is that the Broadway business has changed. And Philadelphia historically was the tryout town before New York. They don't really do tryout towns anymore. So we lost that. But in fact, since the Academy of Music has been available for big touring Broadway shows, we become one of the first stops on the big national tours. And the Broadway business has changed even more because, frankly, they make more money, the producers make more money on the road than they do in New York. It's kind of like, you know, the Gucci store on Fifth Avenue doesn't make any money, but all the other Gucci stores make all the money.
And the airports, so that's
exactly.
Right. That's
so they want to make sure the quality is top notch, that you're seeing on the road pretty much what you're seeing on Broadway. In fact, some of the theaters are quite a bit nicer. We think the Academy's a little nicer than most Broadway houses.
The Grand Dame, I guess. I was going to say, when one hears Broadway at the Academy, it's people get confused because it is all under the aegis of the Kimmel Center. Mm-hmm. But it's happening at the Academy of Music.
Yeah, well, the Kimmel Center really encompasses the Kimmel Center on Broad and Spruce with the three theaters there and the Academy of Music, which is still owned by the orchestra, but we manage the building. So the opera is there, the ballet is there, and, you know, 15 to 20 weeks of Broadway every year, including the big blockbusters like Lion King and Wicked that have come through, and all the things we're announcing now for this summer and for next season.
So we still have our season continuing through, when is it?
Oh, the 7-8
season
with My Fair Lady coming up. It goes until May. Then summertime, we have Color Purple. We have Mamma Mia coming back to Philadelphia for probably the 75th time, but it'll sell out again.
I was going to say you had to have it back because everybody wants to see it, and of course it is always a sell. And then, of course, a very interesting new season. And I think the new season and the season generally reflects, as you said, what's going on Broadway, the taste, and, of course, the updating of things. A lot of books of older shows have been updated, as Marnie Nixon told us with My Fair Lady, the English production. They had rewritten certain parts or expanded certain parts, which was rather interesting.
Well, I think that's what you can do in theater, whether it's musical theater or straight theater or even Shakespeare, dare I say.
Yes.
You have to make it relevant for today. And that doesn't mean you make it everything modern to 2008, but you have to have a relevance. I've done Shakespeare one in my acting career, and I once worked with the director and said, it's not a museum piece, and if you don't update it, not by changing the language so much, but if you don't update your sensibilities and your approach to it, then it's a museum piece.
Well, you anticipated my next question. Mirvan is an actor, actually. You were trained as an actor. That's what you were doing.
I tread the boards for many, many years before I got behind a desk.
But you never gave it up. I mean, you're still doing certain appearances.
A few things here and there when time allows. And the good thing is that I can pick and choose what I want to do, and I don't have to rely on it for my income. So I only do the things I really want to, so I can be really snobbish.
Well, not snobbish at all, but you have the luxury of choice. So now you're doing this, the Cottage Symphony, is that what you said?
I'm doing,
the Bernstein.
I'm narrating the Bernstein Symphony, which is for a choir, boys choir, mezzo, and full orchestra and narrator.
And you're doing this where?
Next time through is in Munich with the Munich Philharmonic with a sort of okay conductor named Zubin Mehta.
I thought that was a familiar name. Okay, so tell us.
But I must say, it took him 15 years to hire me to do a narration. I've done narrations with lots of other conductors.
He's very picky.
He's picky, and he wanted to come and see me do it somewhere, and before he decided that he would do it.
That must be a kind of an interesting experience for you to work with him, and also to constantly, you know, people say, well, you look like him, and this is the same family, and so on and so forth, and yet you have carved out a career for yourself. that is...
We've done it once before. We did the same Cottage Symphony with the Maggio Fiorentino in Florence a couple of years ago. And I think he was much more nervous on the opening night than I was.
Well, he was on the other end because, yeah. You know, this is my progeny. You know? Look what I created and look what he turned out to be. Well, and I think that's very exciting for him.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do produce 100 concerts a year. The most nervous I've been in the past year was when my 4-year-old did his Christmas concert at school.
So been there, done that,
yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, so that's in Munich. And when is that?
In December. So I think we need to put an RTI tour together.
Absolutely.
Led by Jill Pasternak to come to Munich. I'll guarantee you a backstage tour and a dinner afterwards for the whole group.
Not a bad idea.
Munich at Christmas, not bad.
Not bad. So you're actively pursuing your craft, but you have the insight of choosing the programming for what you're going to be presenting at Broadway, the Academy as well, isn't
well,
that
we,
right?
We have a Broadway programming team that's done a terrific job of building a Broadway season from scratch, because there was nothing in 2001 at the Academy, developing the relationships with the Disneys and the big Broadway producers that want us coming into Philadelphia. They've always wanted to come to Philadelphia, but oftentimes it wasn't a theater big enough to house the Lion Kings and the Wickeds and those kind of shows. So we had a terrific Broadway team led by Jordan Fixenbaum to book those shows, and that continues. And now we have a substantial subscription base, and we hopefully keep bringing the kind of shows and the quality of shows and the diversity of shows. I mean, you see next season we have some pretty entertaining fluff, if you will, with Legally Blonde. We have the classic Chorus Line that's been revitalized, and we have Spring Awakening, which won 8 Tony Awards, choreographed by Bill T. Jones. First time that level of choreographer has done Broadway, written by Duncan Sheik, a rising pop star, and directed by Michael Mayer. So this is a Broadway dream team, but not a typical Broadway dream team. It's not Harold Prince and Stephen Sondheim.
Or the names that you know, I think, pretty much. I mean, the fact that there are new faces on the scene are very, very important, that they are exposed here in Philadelphia, which is a very sophisticated audience, and I think it always has been and has been considered that. And again, as you say, the whole Broadway landscape has changed. People can't really, a lot of them don't, they may want to go into New York, but it's difficult. They have to go in, and to get the tickets, it's very, very expensive.
And the parking, and the babysitter.
Oh, my goodness.
Stay in Philly. Take the subway.
Well, exactly. And of course, Philly is a destination now. It has become that, I guess, for Philadelphians, it's always been that. But certainly for within the last 30 years, I think things have changed radically. Certainly in the last 20, they have.
And if you look at, I mean, a show like Lion King that was here for 14 weeks generated $19 million to the local economy in you know, what GPTMC, the Greater Philly Marketing Board, likes to call heads on beds.
Okay.
We call butts and seats for the theater. They call it heads on beds. But, the taxis, the restaurants, the gift stores, the tickets, the hotel rooms, just for that one show of Lion King, generated $19 million in economic activity. And the Academy was filled all summer long, which it generally hasn't been. And we had 250,000 people coming to a Broadway show in the middle of the summer when everyone said, oh, you can't program in the summer. Everyone goes to the shore. Well, 250,000 people came. And I would bet you, I don't have the exact figures, but I would bet you of the 250,000 people that came to Lion King, 240 had never been in the Academy before.
Yes, and of course, it's exposure to a whole other world. I mean, people say Broadway, okay, I'm going to go see a show. But when you come into a place like the Academy, which has such a history and is a glorious theater, it reminds me very much of the New York theaters in a sense, but it's much more eloquent.
Last 2 weeks ago, we had three shows with the comedian Chris Rock at the Academy of Music.
Yeah.
Fabulous show, three sold-out nights. I got one letter from someone saying, how dare you, in the house of Muti, in the house of Ormandy, in the house of Enrico Caruso, shame on you for bringing someone like Chris Rock. Well, you know, I didn't force this gentleman to come, and obviously he didn't, but 7,000 people really enjoyed Chris Rock, so we loved having him.
Well, I think that's been happening generally with the events with Prince Charles and Camilla came,
mm-hmm.
And then of course that was at the Academy. That was quite
an event.
Billy Joel this year. I mean, there's a tremendous audience out there, and they don't have to go out to the Wachovia Center.
Look, there's room for everyone. There's room for every taste. What we try to do is make sure whatever we bring in there of whatever genre has a quality level that it's the best in that genre.
And what I think is important for our audience to know is that there is an ongoing season. We are talking about 2009, but of course there's still 2008 to finish, mm-hmm. and that finishes when, basically?
The 2008, the traditional 2008 series, although in Broadway it kind of, you know, morphs all over the place, it finishes, you know, by Memorial Day, let's say, the traditional season, September to May. But then as soon as Memorial Day is over, Color Purple moves in for a 4-week run, and then Mamma Mia, and then Spamalot is coming back. And then we actually take a little break because the ballet and the opera go back into the Academy, and the chandelier has to be replaced, actually, in the first weeks of September. It's coming back from France, and we need a week or two to hoist it up in the air and make sure it's all working and polished and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I think just to go into the Academy is an experience. It really is a glorious place. So tell us a little bit more about this, the lineup for 2009 again.
Well, we start with Legally Blonde, which, based obviously on the movie, it's also a Broadway show that, because of its subject matter, because of its demographic of its audience, they actually did a live broadcast of the show on MTV. 2 hours live Broadway on MTV. Can you imagine that happening anytime Friday?
Well, I think
show?
Everything's changing. I think that's very important to realize. Things are just not the same anymore.
Right, and it's bringing a very different audience. This is not your grandma and grandpa's Broadway show. And it's attracting a very young audience, and as well as people in their 30s and 40s who were big fans of the movie. It's a terrific show. It's a lot of fun.
It's been very successful.
Entertainment.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's not no one would call it a great piece of artistic achievement, but it's a really, really fun musical. You're gonna love, and you're gonna laugh, and you're gonna cry, and you're gonna walk out singing the tunes.
And then, of course, Chorus Line, Forever and Ever. And then after Chorus Line, Happy Days.
Happy Days, not based on the Samuel Beckett play, based on the television show.
The Fonz.
The Fonz and Ralph and
Henry
Potsy.
Winkling, yeah.
It's a new production, and it's directed by Gary Marshall, who was instrumental in both Laverne and Shirley and Happy Days. And the music is by Paul Williams. Remember Paul Williams, who wrote Evergreen for Streisand?
Oh, wonderful, yeah.
So, you know, there's a good team involved. It's still in pre-production, and we're going to be one of the first people to see it. And this is a show that's going to be seen in Philadelphia before, hopefully, it goes to Broadway.
I was going to say, we still are, not a tryout, but let me get our feet wet now.
They want to take a look at it and mm-hmm. see how it goes. It's obviously got mass appeal from the baby boomers that grew up watching Happy Days, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, direct from London. We all remember the movie. I was saying to someone yesterday, when I first saw that movie, it scared the bejesus out of me.
Really?
So I remember that child catcher scene, and I was 6 or 7.
At that age.
I couldn't watch it. So that's intact with the flying car, etc. And the music and lyrics are by the Sherman Brothers, who wrote Mary Poppins, and they wrote Jungle Book.
Now, you also have Ain't Misbehavin', which is probably one of the gems of Broadway, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I think as far as musical reviews gone on Broadway, I mean, I remember seeing Nell Carter and Ken Page on Broadway.
So did I.
But Richard Maltby, who conceived it and directed it, is doing this again. It's a 30th anniversary.
And so he's still around, huh?
Yeah, of course he's still around. He's not that old.
No.
But he's putting it back together, and, as our culture changes and as our Broadway changes, the two stars of it are both American Idol stars. Reuben Studdard and Frenchie are starring in it. So it's going to bring a new twist to a really glorious review from the 70s.
Yeah, of course, music of Fats Waller. Now, Riverdance, the farewell tour.
Did you ever think it would leave? But here it is.
Someone said it to me, kind of with a tongue in cheek, they've had that farewell tour before. So.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, Ravi Shankar, who we're bringing back on the Kimmel Center Presents stage. We were doing his, you know, fifth annual farewell tour.
Oh, my goodness. Now, Moving Out, that's the Billy Joel.
Billy Joel, Twyla Tharp.
That was, how was it on Broadway? Was it a success?
Very big success. It ran for months and months and months. It's been in Philly before. It played the Merriam one time for a week, so we're bringing it back. It's all the great songs by Billy Joel with a live band on stage and this glorious choreography by Twyla Tharp. So it's for the people who love Billy Joel and who love dance. I mean, it's a dance piece. There's no dialogue. It's a dance musical.
Well, what a lineup, and I think something that that we're all looking forward to, and I really appreciate your taking the time out to come and speak with us today, Mervon.
Well, we love RTI. We love the support of RTI, and we sell at the Kimmel Center and the Academy of Music, a million people a year come through to see shows, whether it's the orchestra or the ballet, the opera, or Broadway, or what we do with Kimmel Center Presents. So there's a lot of activity coming through Philadelphia, and we're very proud to be part of it.
And how lucky are we to have you?
Well, thank you.
Thanks again.